ready, brother. The title of my lesson tonight is The Strange Woman. And I have a text I'd like to read if you want to follow. Scripture references I'll use printed on the handout already. So the first reading is from 1 Kings chapter 11. I'm going to read the first five verses of that chapter and then verses 9 through 11. It says, "But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, the Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, You shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. And the Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord, God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he kept not that which the Lord commanded. Wherefore the Lord said unto Solomon, For as much as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded thee, I will surely rend the kingdom from thee and will give it to thy servant." And that'll conclude the first portion of my reading there. Not difficult to figure out where I got the title from. I would have loved to have brought a lesson of any other variety, I suppose, but this is particularly the one that the Lord impressed upon my heart, The Strange Woman. Solomon was a wise man. We know that God gave him great wisdom unlike any other man in his day. And it's interesting to me that the verses that we'll read here in a few moments from Proverbs were written by this same man. He certainly was able to write them and to speak from the experiences that he had. But despite his wisdom, Solomon made very poor choices in his life. And those choices, as we read about here in 1 Kings, really were perhaps the greatest downfall to the nation of Israel throughout the course of their history. It indeed did lead to the division of the kingdom. God tore the kingdom from Solomon and gave it to his servant Jeroboam, and the kingdom split, the 10 northern tribes and those two in the south. And it brought great havoc upon the people. And the idolatry which he adopted and the things which he practiced, they perpetuated throughout generations and generations. And it was a trouble to them throughout the better portion of their history. And I suppose it wasn't really until that final captivity, the Babylonian captivity, that they seemed to have been cured of that idolatry. And I want to read also some verses from the fifth chapter of Proverbs. And we'll read from that chapter the first eight verses. It says, "My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me thou now therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house." What I want to talk about tonight for a little while with the help of the Lord is sexual immorality. And I want to speak about it in a way that would be beneficial, would please the Lord, and would help the people of God today. I see this particular sin as one that is plaguing our society and plaguing our young people. As a pastor, and you pastors, I'm sure, have had the same experience much more than I have. I have seen time and time again where young people particularly, certainly all ages are susceptible to this, but certainly young people, especially in the society we live in today, are being plagued by the sin of sexual immorality in one fashion or another. It's not my intention today to get specific or to make you blush or to do anything of that nature, but I do want to address it the way that the biblical writers addressed it, and they certainly did. When I look over the New Testament, and I haven't ran the stats on this, but I'm not sure that I see any other particular sin that is so commonly and oftenly addressed as the sin of sexual immorality, whether it be fornication of some variety or adultery or incest or these various things. The New Testament writers spoke about it. And I don't believe there's any particular need for specifics. I think when we speak about it, people know very well what we're talking about. And Paul said in one place, of the deeds of the Gentiles, they ought not to even be spoken of. And so I think that there's some discretion that is worthy in these situations. But it needs to be addressed because it is certainly plaguing our young people and plaguing families. And if you destroy the family, and Satan is smart about this, he knows very well what he's doing. If you destroy and break up the family, you destroy and you break up the Lord's churches. Our churches are composed of families, and our families are built around the bond and the unity that exists between a husband and a wife. And if you get a wedge in there and you begin to work at destroying that, then you will not only affect that husband and that wife, you'll affect the children of that home. And it's like a disease, and James talks about that, and I have that verse, I believe, here a little bit later on. It's a disease that spreads and begins to infect all that is around it, and it comes into the church house with us, and it infects the Lord's churches, and it's really, I believe, putting a hurt upon us, perhaps more than we would like to admit or more than we would like to talk about, and we would do much better to simply call it for what it is and give our young people some good counsel and advice and wisdom and how that they might keep themselves from the influence of the strange woman. And now there are a couple of manners a couple of ways that you might interpret the fifth chapter of Proverbs. As I read and studied about it, I found some writers that believed it spoke primarily and almost solely about the harlot or about the seductress, the woman, the very physical nature of it, and I absolutely believe that it does speak about that. Some believe that it's really more symbolic of idolatry, and I certainly believe that it is symbolic of idolatry. And in my way of looking at this, I really believe that it encompasses both things. And I believe that Solomon knew very well the danger in it. We read in the preceding verses in 1 Kings chapter 11 that it began with the women. It began with the many wives. I suppose what it really began with was Solomon's desire for more and more and more. His lack of contentment and his lack of satisfaction with what God had given him and his desire to have a greater political presence in the world, he began to take political wives. He'd marry king's daughters and the Pharaoh's daughter and things of that nature, and he would bring them in. And really the reason he did that was so that he might be able to spread the kingdom out and have a greater political presence in the region. And that brought those women in, and those women began to turn Solomon's heart away from God. And as his heart began to turn away from God, idolatry began to creep in, and perhaps at first he just allowed it to happen, and then before you knew it, he was a part of it. And it just spread. Now, sin is sin. And, James taught us that if we offend the law in one point, that we're guilty of all. And that certainly is true, and I suppose we need to be somewhat cautious when we begin to talk about the varying degree of sin. But I certainly do believe today, and you may not, I don't know, but I believe that there are some sins which are more damaging and have a greater impact upon those that participate in them than others perhaps do. And the sin of sexual immorality is spoken of, I believe, in the most, some of the most severe nature that any sin that we hear about in the New Testament or the Old Testament or otherwise is. It has a very damaging effect upon people, even down to the point where it says that it turned Solomon's heart away from God. We see what happened with his father when he committed adultery, and then his adultery that he had committed with Bathsheba led him and prompted him to be guilty of murder of her husband. And we see in his prayer of repentance there in the 51st Psalm what effect that it had over that righteous man David. How that he had to pray and say, "Lord, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. Restore the presence of thy Holy Spirit so that I might teach transgressors thy way." It had a great effect upon him. It made him ineffective. It robbed him of his ability to influence others and to be a king that ruled over his kingdom the way that he should. And it will rob us today if we let it creep in, and it will rob our young people today of the ability to influence those that are around them. Whether other people know about it or they don't, it can still rob us of our ability to influence. Why? Well, because what really influences those that we're around is the Holy Spirit working and dwelling inside of us, and people, whether they understand what it is or not, they feel the effects of it, just like the wind, like Jesus taught Nicodemus. They sense the effect of it. And when the presence of the Holy Spirit is not with us on account of our sin, and in this case, on account of our sexual immorality, then our influence will be very little, if it's anything at all. And so we need to guard our lives and watch our lives so that we may not be influenced by the strange woman. She is, in fact, all around us. Now, when I talk tonight about the strange woman, and I refer to this, I'm speaking about her in a general sense. I'm not identifying her as any one individual person. I suppose that there are individuals that could be labeled as a strange woman, and those wives of Solomon were called strange women, but I want to speak about it more in the general sense. The strange woman is the seductress. She is the one who is a harlot, or perhaps not a harlot, but just a seductress, one who entices. And she, as I have here in the outline, she represents that spirit of wickedness which seeks to entice mankind through lust and draw their hearts away from God. And we can read in Judges the verses I have written there about Samson and Delilah and the effect that she had on him. And I want to read that. It says, "It came to pass afterward," this is in Judges 16, verses 4 through 5. It says, "It came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and said unto her, Entice him, and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him." Isn't that what the strange woman does today? Satan whispers in her ear and says, "Entice him and see where his strength lies, so that we might, as it says here, so that we might prevail against him." It says that we might bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee, every one of us, 1,100 pieces of silver. There is an earthly profit or some sort of sinful reward for that sort of enticement that the strange woman indulges in today. Now, I'm speaking about this, and the Bible speaks about it primarily as a female, and I think largely that's what we see today, but it's not limited to that. And with the rise and the prominence of homosexuality in the world that we live in today, it may be the enticement may come from a woman, it may come from a man, but whatever it is a it is immoral, it is sin, and it is to be warned against and to avoid it.
And so Delilah, she, as we know the story, she figured out how that she might rob Samson of his strength. And she prevailed against him in being able to do that. Well, the strange woman today is doing that very thing. She is trying to figure out how to entice young men so that she might draw them into her house and that she might be able to prevail against them and to rob their strength from them. And so who is the strange woman today in the society we live in? Remember that John said in 1 John chapter 2, as I have written here, that all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of the life is not of the Father, but it is of the world. And we're living in a world that is very sexually driven. It is very, it's all around us. You know, it's very difficult to live in the world that we live in and not have the images or in some way to have the influence of the strange woman surrounding us. But remember that Proverbs chapter 5, Solomon said, you stay far away from her house. Don't go anywhere near her house. And that's a difficult task for us to do today because she's all around us. She surrounds us. And in our society, she's not only permitted to be here, but she is exalted. She's given a position of prominence in the world that we live in today. People lift up the strange woman and they say, well, look at how wonderful that she is or how famous that she is. And she's put on stages, and she is put on primetime television, and she's put everywhere that she can be put, and she is promoted in the world that we live in today. I think in ages gone by that it wasn't that way, and it's become alarming to me just how lax that our society's moral standard is. If you've ever read Democracy in America by Alexis de Tocqueville, you read about the young woman in this country during that time period. Oh, it was so much different, wasn't it? There was just a meekness about the home, and the man was content to go to his home, and he was satisfied with the wife of his youth and with his children, and he didn't seek for anything else from anybody else. He was contented and satisfied. And the influence of the strange woman was far less, I believe, in those days than it was today in the society we live in. Now, she's always been around. She's always been in the world. And there have been different times where she was perhaps more prominent than others. You know, certainly in the time of Rome and in the time of Greece with the pagan gods, you know, I mean, that was a common practice. In those pagan, you ever wondered why the pagan temples were so awful, regardless of the fact that they were worshiping false gods there? Many times what they did to try to incite their false gods was they committed acts of homosexuality and all manners of sexual immorality right there in that temple and in that altar place. That was how they tried to entice their gods. And our God, the true God, has always looked upon that with great disdain. And he has no interest in that, and he warns his people to stay far away from that because it turns our hearts away from him. And so the strange woman's all around us. I have it written here that she can be found on billboards. She can be found in the magazine rack in the grocery store. She's on certainly on the television, all over the television, commercials and the TV shows. She's on the internet. She she's on the internet. You may click on a page that's harmless, and there she is down there in the corner, enticing and trying to use that allurement to draw people in. Avoid it. Run away from it. Do what Joseph did. You just get as far away from it as you can. There's no good that is to come from it, and if we try to suppose that we can be near to her house but not go into her house, then we're really fooling ourselves, and what we're really doing is we're leaving ourselves open for temptation and for sin. So she's found everywhere. You know, in Indianapolis, if you drive around 465, there's a billboard that sits up there that has a half-naked woman on it, and you know, it's quite alarming to see that. And you drive around it, and I'll tell you, every time that I get anywhere near that area, I remind myself that I need to look down and look to the other side and focus on my lane and not look up. But that's the kind of world that we're living in today. I mean, she's just posted, and they cover pretty much nothing. She's right there and she's all around us. And I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable here tonight, and I'm not trying to give more information than is necessary, but folks, this is just the facts of how that it is. And these things are, if they don't, if you've gotten to a place in your life where these things are not a temptation or a bother or a nuisance in your mind, then I'm glad for you. But I'm afraid that a lot of our young people have not yet gotten to that point, and they need to be warned about the dangers of the strange woman and sexual immorality in their lives so that they might avoid it. And they may be people that are after God's heart. That's what we want, isn't it? I mean, we want to love Him supremely. We want to love Him entirely. And you can't give your heart to the strange woman. You can't give your affection and your interest to the strange woman and at the same time give it fully to your wife and to the Lord. You can't do that. And so she must be avoided at all costs, but remember, she's all around us. And I believe today that there is a great danger in, I want to say capitulating, but I'm not a grammatical scholar, and I don't know if that's the exact right word, but giving in to the idea, some people say, well, that show, it's a great show. If you can get over these few sex scenes that are in that show, you just, look the other way or fast forward or do something like that. Look, I don't believe that that's the right approach at all. If that stuff is in that movie, then you just need to not watch that movie. And if the effect of the strange woman is in a book that you read or in a movie that you watch, or she's not in the television show you're watching, but every commercial, there she is. Well, why don't we just turn it off and just get rid of the effect of the strange woman and put it as far, why don't we do what Solomon warned us to do, to flee from her house, to not come near to her house. Well, that's what we ought to do if we truly desire to be people after God's heart the way that we ought to be. We would just put her as far away as possible. I've seen young people's lives that have just been wrecked by the effect of the strange woman. And it bothers me. And I hope that it bothers you as well. And I tell you, if anything that it's done that's good is it's made me realize all the more how important that it is that I guard my life. You know, Solomon was a man that had great wisdom. Great wisdom. He was a smarter person than I am, and he had more wisdom than I do, but all the wisdom he had wasn't enough to keep him from making a poor choice. In the end, he still made the choices that he made. And if we think that we're smart enough, or we think that we're wise enough to be able in our wisdom to avoid lust and temptation, then we have fooled ourselves. And what we really need to do is just exactly what the Scriptures teach us to do, to not submit ourselves or to put ourselves in the position that we might be affected by the influence of the strange woman. So, let me go on. The ways of the strange woman. Proverbs 5:3, it said, "The lips of the strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil." What she's saying sounds good, and it looks good, and it's enticing, and it wants to draw you in, and she gives some promise of some benefit or some pleasure that might be found. But as we read on in those verses, it says her end is bitter as wormwood. This is probably a quote I read somewhere. I can't tell you where I read it. But what may be sweet on the lips is going to be sour in the stomach. And we need to realize that that's the ways that she works. She is deceptive and she entices and she desires to draw them in and to bring them to a place where she might destroy them. That's what Delilah was trying to do with Samson. She wasn't really trying to express love for him or provide that. She was trying to entice him so that she may make herself wealthy. 1,100 pieces of silver. I'm not sure how much that was in that day, but I'm going to guess it was quite a bit. And she was getting it not just from one person, she was getting it from every one of them. So she was looking for the wealth and the benefit of herself. Proverbs 5 and 6 says, "Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, thou canst not know them." What's that mean? Well, I think it means this. She promises you, if you follow after her, that she'll give you this benefit, and you chase after that, and you follow after that, and as soon as you get somewhere around it, she moves. Her ways change. They're movable. You never quite get there. You never find that benefit that she thought that you may have thought that she would provide. And I don't know how many times I've heard young people say things of that nature. That, you know, I thought what I was looking for was in this relationship or was in this particular thing. But I got there and I found out that it was miserable. And at that point, they've wrecked their lives largely. And I might say this, that with the grace of God, there is an ability to recover somewhat. But I wonder if people that walk down that path ever really recover from the effects of it. I'm not sure that they do. And I know by the grace of God, there can be a lot of restoration and recovery that happens. So I don't want to underestimate that. I wrote here that, you know, as Homer's sirens, she lures men in with words that are sweet and pleasant to the ear, a voice that is smooth and easy to entertain. Perhaps you remember reading Homer's, I believe it was Iliad, and the sirens out at sea, the beautiful women or whatever exactly that they were, and they had beautiful voices, sung these beautiful songs that drew the sailors in, and then destruction. And so that's the ways of the strange woman. She draws in with some false promise, some false idea that there may be benefit in it. But in the end, it's bitter as wormwood, and it ought to be avoided at all cost. Let me go on. What is the effect of sexual immorality? I have here lust and the progression of sin. I like the verse here, the verses in James that I have written down. I think they're a good picture or explanation of how this thing happens. James 1, 14 and 15, it says, "But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." Doesn't happen all necessarily all at once. It begins with temptation. And that temptation begins to draw upon or to work upon the man's lust. And there's enticement, and he's enticed toward this sin. And this sin, when it works its full effect on us, the end is death. It's bitterness. It's loneliness and miserableness. And we find in the end that what sounded good at the beginning was not good at all. It was actually quite the opposite. And so avoid temptation. As much as is possible, avoid temptation. Stay as far away from it as you can. Don't suppose that you're strong enough and smart enough to watch that show that has those few scenes in it that are not good and you can overlook those things. Just don't even put yourself in that position. Stay away from it. And if you stay away from it, you'll do well. I want to read some verses. Does that mean I have 10 minutes left? Okay. The remedy. This is the wonderful part. You can go on your own time and read the second half of the fifth chapter of Proverbs. That's really, in my mind, that's the good part. That's the answer, the solution. But I want to talk with the time I have left about the remedy. In Genesis 39, we read about Joseph. And it says this, "Came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And she said, lie with me. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within." You know, when I was a young preacher, the older preachers warned me. They said, don't go somewhere where it's just you and a woman by yourself. And I'm glad for that advice. That is good advice. Joseph didn't do anything particularly wrong here, but he put himself into a position where he could have been falsely blamed, and that's what she tried to do. And so that's what she did. He ended up getting thrown in prison, as I remember. And so I would give that same advice to young people, young men, to any of us today. Don't put yourself in that position. Whether you do something wrong or not, it may look poor, and you may have false accusations placed against you. But at any rate, goes on and it says, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. He ran just as quick as he could. He did what Solomon warned us to do in the 5th chapter of Romans. Get away from her house. Run away from her house. You flee from it just as fast as you can. And you don't turn back. Don't even come near to it. You know, if her house is right over here and the road that you take to go home is right here, find you another road to go home and go a different route. It's worth going a little extra, putting a little extra mileage in if that means that you stay away from her house and you don't put yourself in position to be tempted by the strange woman. And I realize today that there is, she's all around us. It's hard to avoid it entirely. But you keep your eyes focused upon the Lord. If you're married, you keep your eyes focused upon your wife. You know, God gave us everything that we need to satisfy the natural desire that we have. He gave us all we need. He gave Adam in the Garden Eve, and that was all that he really needed. Our nature, our created nature, will be satisfied with one, with that one wife that God gave us. But our sinful nature desires everything that we're not supposed to have. And that's what happened in the Garden of Eden. God had given them everything that they wanted. He'd given them that woman. He'd given them all the trees to eat from that he wanted. But he said, "Of this one tree, you stay away from it." And sure enough, his sinful nature caused him to desire that one thing that he couldn't have. And we still see that all around us today. But it didn't turn out too good for Adam, did it? And I tell you today that it won't turn out too good for us if we desire that forbidden fruit, that thing which God warns us against. I got to hurry along here. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. I believe that. It's a simple verse. It's not complicated. Submit yourselves to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Now, if you leave off that first part of the verse and you just say, "resist the devil and he'll flee from you," then chances are you're not going to do a very good job resisting the devil, and he's probably not going to flee from you. But the first part of that verse is really the key. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. We need the help of God. We need his grace and his strength, and we need him to embolden us in the inner man, strengthen us in the inner man. And if he does that, then these things won't be so difficult. They won't really maybe even be that hard at all. And you'll get to a point where those things don't entice you. They don't cause you to desire those things. If anything, maybe you think, "I need to pray for that person," or how sad that it is to see them going down that path. And maybe even pray that the Lord save their soul. And so if you'll submit yourself to God, resist the devil, he'll flee from you. The strange woman seeking for an entrance into the lives of God's people. And I'm afraid for too many of our young people, she has found the entrance. And she is wreaking havoc and doing damage. And damage is coming to the house of God because of it. So we should avoid as much as possible any proximity to her. Moving on, part of the remedy here is focus. Focus. Keep your eye on the prize. Keep your eye on the Lord. Keep your eye on the goal of why we're here and what we're doing here. Jesus said this in Matthew 6:22. He said, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." If you focus your eye upon him, then your whole body will be full of light. And those things won't be nearly so difficult to resist or to flee from. And in fact, many times you won't even notice it anymore. And so Solomon went on there in the 5th chapter of Proverbs, and he said let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. There's the remedy. God didn't ask every one of us to be eunuchs, to live a life of celibacy. He didn't ask that, did he? He gave us wives. He gave us a proper context in which to fulfill the natural desire that man has. And that's where our focus ought to be, upon our wife, loving her and looking to her and her beauty and all of these things. Proverbs 5:15 says, drink waters out of thine own cistern and running waters out of thine own well. Look to your own wife, look to your own home for the things that you need, for that the desire that you have, and you'll do well. And why on earth would you want to go drink from a muddy puddle when you have fresh waters running from your own home? And too many times I think that's what happened. There's this enticement by the strange woman that it's something better or something more than what you have. In reality, it's just a muddy puddle of water. What you have at home is far better. It's pure. It's clean. It's blessed by God. So sin's given us lust, but God has given us love. And certainly, as we already said, it's sinful nature to desire that which is forbidden. I've spoken primarily tonight about the natural side of this, sexual immorality, and that was really where my burden was. But as I said at the beginning, there is a tendency and an ability, I suppose, in this. I feel like I must have left out a page. Suppose I did. Let me just touch on a couple things there. It'll be a little out of order, but that's all right. I want to talk just for a moment. I only got a couple minutes left about the effect on men and the effect on women. I think this is important. Solomon began the fifth chapter of Proverbs by addressing, he said, my son. And I think he's really just addressing all young men in this. He said, attend unto my wisdom, bow thine ear to my understanding. Certainly none of us are exempt, but young men are particularly susceptible to it. Young men, when they're tempted and enticed by that false promise of pleasure and a false sense of what love and marital happiness is, they're led away by that influence of the strange woman. When men entertain, listen, I want us to catch this. When men entertain the strange woman, they give young women the idea or the impression that if they're going to gain their love, that they have to somehow be like that strange woman. And I see this in the world that we live in today. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I certainly have seen it. As far as our young women go, Proverbs 31 and 30, it says, favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Our young women, they're given a false expectation of who they should be and how they should seek love. And the strange woman creates jealousy among young women, enticing them to indulge in the same practice. She is a recruiter of our young women. She wants them to be like her, to do the things that she does. Dress the way that she dresses. Listen to the music that she listens to. Use the same practice to try to win the affection of young men that she uses. And that's far from what they need to be. The woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. For all of our young people, and I'll wrap it up here, I think I'm out of time. For all of our young people, the strange woman provides an allurement to what they do not have rather than finding contentment with what they do have. And we live in a society today that certainly has trouble being content with the many blessings that God has already given us. And if we'll focus on that and work on being content with what God has blessed us with, these things won't be nearly so difficult. I got a little out of order and I missed some things. You can read the lesson and take it for what it's worth. But I want to say this. As the people of God, many of you tonight here are much older than I am. You've been down this way longer than I have. And perhaps you don't see these things as plainly as I do, or maybe that you do. Maybe you do see them. But be mindful of this, that our young people are living in a world that is very sexually driven, and the influence of the strange woman is all around us. And you be there for them and help them in any way that you can. Give them good counsel, good advice, and try to point them towards a good, godly spouse and to focus on that marriage and that relationship and guard them from the influence of the strange woman and guard our churches from the influence of the strange woman. That's my lesson tonight. I appreciate your attention.
Appreciate the good lesson. We're going to take a break until 8 o'clock. That gives us, looks like maybe about 7 or 8 minutes. You might need to go to the restroom or get a drink of water or something. So we'll take a break